It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
If Emma Hayes had been the coach in what's happened over the last years with this team, how do you think things would have been different?
She's a no BS person. I think that's why I get along with her so well.
Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue colored glasses. This show, we'll be talking, well, with the great Carly Lloyd. Yeah, she's back. We'll also be talking MLS's CCC beatdown, U.S. men's national team starting 11, Argentine submarines, messy power, fresh eggs, and so much more. But first, joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how you doing on this Wednesday, March 13th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. Still buzzing from an eventful night last night working here covering the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Triple header, baby. We were back at it. So we had to get the rust off and get back on air. And it was a fun triple header. We'll talk more about the games later on. But it was fun to get back, get the gang back together. Did you have a good time?
I did. Yeah, we had a celebrity visitor, Kyla, stop by. She wanted to see us in action. Do you think she was impressed?
Impressed. I'm not sure I would use that word. The controlled chaos of it, she probably maybe a little bit impressed. I asked her throughout the night if she was seeing anything interesting or learning anything, and she humored me. We brought her up to the set and all that, so she saw what was happening in front of the camera, but more importantly, what was happening behind the camera. And I guess the differences between, you know, the linear side and the digital side, and obviously with what we are doing on the linear side, it's timed much better. There's a lot less time to actually do the things that you're doing. And so you kind of have to be doing a lot of timing and calculations in your head. But I think she probably saw some interesting things or learned some stuff. I don't know. What do you think? Did she hang with you at all?
She did, yeah. You know, it was funny. I pointed out like three different people in our control room and what they do. And she said, oh, Aaron does all those jobs for us.
Yes. She found out very, very quickly that the personnel that is involved in a linear production is a little different.
She did make one rookie mistake. She left after the second game. And the third game is when we get loopy and the control room becomes fun. We had a lengthy chat about the Kate Middleton photo situation.
Oh,
she missed out on that.
We solved all of that. Yeah, there's all sorts of fun that goes on back and forth. But anyway, we had a good time. Have you watched anything, my friend?
You know, it's funny. I approach this segment differently from you. I usually only bring up things that I like. But today I'm going to bring up something that I'm not enjoying.
I am too. So it's a double whammy of negativity. Wonderful way to start off a podcast.
Yes. Have you watched any of this new HBO show, The Regime?
No.
I had very high hopes. Kate Winslet, supposed to be kind of similar in tone to Veep or The Death of Stalin.
It's a comedy.
It's purported to be, but I haven't laughed once through two episodes, and it's not that interesting either. It's only two episodes. I'm going to stick with it for a little bit longer, but so far, this is a total flub by HBO, which is surprising because this show got a lot of hype.
Are you going to stick with it because you just feel you have to, or are you really giving them the benefit of the doubt because of the star power, I guess, and the hype?
Yeah, benefit of that. I had such high hopes that I can't believe the show is going to be this bad. So I'm going to give it a few more episodes, see if it improves.
Oof. I watched a documentary I think is on Netflix called ARA San Juan, the submarine that disappeared, about this Argentine submarine that disappeared a few years ago and the hunt for it. And it is, while it's a tragic and horrible type of story, they didn't make it as interesting and dramatic and compelling as I think it possibly could. And look, this is in the line of numerous subway stories that have, and documentaries that have come out over the last couple of years. So it was yeah, it was not something that kept my attention and not something that I could recommend. I also, to be fair, it was in Spanish, and I use the, if it's available, the actors that dub in the English. And I think that anything suffers from that, because I can't for the life of me in this day and age fathom why it is so bad. And it's consistent. It's not just this documentary, but this one was in particularly bad. It's just, it's so bad. And it shouldn't be. There should be voice actors out there that can replicate the emotion and the dynamic that is required in acting. Because, by the way, you're just voice acting. You're not even having to do anything from a physical perspective. So at least get the voice part of it right. And yet consistently, it fails to marry up with what is happening on the screen, and it drives me crazy. But I guess the alternative is just watch the subtitles.
You know, our boss, Zach Kenworthy, worked in news before transitioning to sports. And many years ago, he had the job. He did the Bin Laden voice on his tapes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That is great, great trivia. All right, my friend, you ready to light this candle?
Let's do it.
All right. As we mentioned, we got Carly Lloyd. All right. We welcome back into the State of the Union pod our good friend and colleague, Carly Lloyd. Good to see you again, Carly. We were out on the slopes a few weeks ago. You are incredible, as is your husband down there. And I was just following along. All right. Listen, I love to talk to you about soccer in general. Doesn't matter, men's, women's, co-ed, naked. It really doesn't matter. But let's get right into it. Our friend Lindsey Horan, okay, had a wonderful tournament. But a few weeks ago, she mentioned the fact that she thought that American soccer fans, most of them aren't smart. And she said they don't know the game and they don't understand. She has since apologized for that. But do you believe that the American soccer fan is dumb?
Probably wasn't the best choice of word that she used. I still keep in touch with Lindsay a lot. We text a lot. Big fan of hers, obviously. Loved playing with her. You know, I understand the messaging that she was trying to state. I mean, she plays overseas. She's played overseas early on in her youth days, and now is at Lyon again. And I think just the culture and the education as far as the tactical aspect of the game is viewed differently. I think here in America, you know, it's more statistical driven, and they may look at the person who scored, you know, two goals, but maybe there was somebody else on the pitch who pulled all the strings and made things happen. So I think there's just a different culture and education piece that is just different. And that's because the global game is way different than it is here in America. Although, you know, things are looking upward. Fans are more engaged. There's more journalists writing about it. There's more buzz. There's more criticism. So I think she just learned from the choice of, you know, one word in particular that she used. But I did kind of understand where she was going with that.
Hey, listen, we all put our foot in our mouth. I will raise my hand plenty of times in the past, and I'll probably do it again going forward. I want Lindsey Horan on the field, and we saw how important she is to this team. Before I let Mossy jump in here, let's just continue on with that. How important is she to this team going forward that we know is going through kind of a transition with a lot of young and really exciting players that are coming into the fold?
Well, I think, you know, we had this discussion at the World Cup last summer about Lindsay of, you know, kind of poking the bear, and it woke her up, and it got her really mad, and she ended up scoring that great goal against the Netherlands. And I think, you know, Lindsay has always been this player who wants to play good footy. She wants to pass the ball around. She's kind of been the eight, a bit box to box. She's been the pivot. I think her best role is the number 10 higher up on the pitch. I mean, she was, you know, a forward her whole life until she came on the national team and Abby Wambach was in that position. So there was no way she was going to play that position. So Jill then thought, you know, let's put her in the midfield. So I feel like she's always kind of had this supporting cast or supporting role that she's played. And now as a leader, as a captain, as somebody who's, you know, really got to take the team on her shoulders, she stepped up in a way that I haven't seen her step up before. And it was consistent. And I think that she's just going to continue to get better, get more confident, evolve. She's got to continue to get players involved out on the pitch. But scoring goals, being involved, and getting others involved is going to be a huge asset to our game. So it was really good to see her this tournament.
Hey, Carly, the Gold Cup was interesting because Nai Swanger was so impressive, but then Crystal Dunn starts the final. Alex Morgan, originally not in the squad, a late injury replacement, but then she ends up playing a starring role. It feels like the U.S. hasn't ripped the Band-Aid off yet as far as this youth movement. Do you think that's going to happen at the Olympics, or is Emma Hayes going to go out of her way to sprinkle in some veterans and have more of a blend of youth and experience?
I was a little surprised about Nightswanger not getting the nod, even Jaden Shaw in that final game. I mean, obviously, we've got the NWSL creeping around the corner, so maybe it was load management and minutes, and they were trying to manage all that. But, you know, everything is about opportunity. And Alex Morgan being left off, which most would say her time was done with the national team, you know, comes in, scores some goals, assists a goal. And I think that you can never take any moment that you're out on the field for granted. So I think that, you know, every player that steps onto the pitch, Crystal Dunn playing in the final, it's your time to shine. It's your time to prove why you belong there. And I think from this group in particular, in this tournament, we talked about, you know, the World Cup and everything that kind of went wrong. And at the end of the day, it really does come down to the mentality piece. And I know that I was crucified for that, but it's awfully funny how every person is talking about that. Team and coaches as well as some other pundits and journalists and fans. But if you look at this tournament, you know, all players were involved. Every single player played a role. And it was a great mimic to what the Olympic tournament is going to be. And I think, you know, Emma has really made her mark, even though she's not there. You can see every player is focused. Every player is wanting to perform at the best of their ability. They're on the front foot more. You know, their defensive press was higher up onto the pitch, and that hasn't been the case since the Olympics with Lacko in 2021. So you can just tell that there's a shift in focus that every single player has to prove themselves. And even though Emma's not there, she's watching and she's observing and she's taking everything into consideration. And so players like Alex Morgan, Becky Sauerbrunn, Crystal Dunn, even Alyssa Nair, every opportunity you get is your tryout. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see who the 18 are going to be on this roster, because we talk about that kind of old guard versus, you know, new young emerging stars.
You brought up Emma Hayes, and I have yet to hear or speak to anybody yet who has a bad thing to say about her. And she's coming in as one of the premier coaches in the women's game. You know her. And while this is looking forward and what she's going to do, I'm curious because I want to know what she does or what we think she is going to do with this team that would be different in the past. And so if Emma Hayes had been the coach in what's happened over the last years with this team, how do you think things would have been different? How would she have dealt with things either on or off the field that is different, that would give us hope that going forward, both on and off the field, this is going to be a team that unites the country and that people can get on board with?
She's a no BS person. I think that's why I get along with her so well, because she just says it how it is. She's not afraid to ruffle feathers, not afraid to make tough decisions. And she would have never allowed what has gone on over the last several years with this national team. I think she would have put people in their place. She probably wouldn't have had some of the players on rosters. Maybe she would have left some off so that they could reevaluate themselves and dig deeper and make sure that their performances were better. But she's going to come in here and she is not going to put up with anything. If you're not good enough and if you're not performing, you're going to be gone or you're going to be on the bench. I mean, we saw a player like Rose Lavelle, for whatever reason, sitting on the bench. You know, we haven't seen that in a while. And I just think that it's always good. I have visited the bench many times. It is always a good therapeutic thing to visit the bench every so often, because it just kind of jump starts you a little bit more, kick starts you back into gear. you may not think you need it, but I think she's just going to come in and ruffle feathers and put out the best 11, and not necessarily the best 11 individually talented players, but the best 11 players that are going to actually play well together. And, you know, the way that she's going to want to play and implement her tactics and all of that. But yeah, she's got a very strong, confident personality, but does a very good job of being able to manage and put her arm around some players when needed. So, you know, I'm really excited to kind of see her come in and see what she's going to do, but it's going to be a long process. This isn't going to be something that's going to happen overnight, and she's going to have to get in there, pick her team and really implement the identity and the way that she wants this team to play.
How do you think she would have handled that sensitive time and issue when it came to the national anthem and the kneeling and all that kind of stuff within that team and that dynamic? Because that, you know, that would be something interesting to see how she would have dealt with. How do you think she would have dealt with that?
You know, I'm not sure. It's hard to say. I think that you hear her over at Chelsea speak upon issues that the, you know, players are facing, whether it be off the field, on the field, just the respect that women deserve. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that she is a player's advocate as well, and she's going to stand up for the players and support the players. But I think that whenever a player or whenever something becomes bigger than the team and bigger than the common goal, collective goal of winning, that's when you have a problem. And if you don't have a strong enough leader that is able to spearhead the team to stay focused, it can get out of hand and it can spiral out of control. And that's, you know, sort of what we saw at the World Cup. You know, I know every single player at the World Cup wanted to win and wanted to perform and wanted to do all these things, but you know, you just look at players when you take on so much other responsibility off the field, it just takes away from your focus and it takes away from, you know, what you're there to do. So I think she probably would have managed it better. She probably would have taken maybe a bit more of the load or, you know, had conversations with players and just making sure that all the players remain united about it, even though there's differing opinions. I think being able to respect everybody's opinion, no matter what they stand for, is ultimately the goal of that.
I know the circumstances of Emma Hayes taking over so close to the Olympics lends itself to this narrative that the Olympics are just part of the building process for the next World Cup. But you won multiple gold medals. I'm sure you cherished those almost as much as the World Cup titles. Does it bother you at all that the U.S. women are going into an Olympics and people seem to be downplaying the importance of it?
It's different. We've never faced that. And, you know, of course, every soccer player's dream is to play in a World Cup. That's the cream of the crop. That's what you ultimately want to win, want to play for. But the Olympics was sort of the next tournament that we always had. There was no Women's Gold Cup. She believes had kind of started later on. There weren't many tournaments that could kind of give you that feeling of being able to lift a trophy and win a medal. So I think that, you know, the way that the things are going within the women's national team currently, as a player, I'd of course want to go and win the Olympics and be as prepared as possible. And that's still on the table. You know, that's, you know, something that the team as a collective are going to be speaking about. I would imagine, you know, they're not going to just sandbag the tournament and go out and be awful. They're going to want to compete and want to do well, but in order to, you know, get to that long-term goal, they've obviously signed Emma. She's obviously not coming until May. To me, it feels like they're planning for the long-term more than the short-term. And so you kind of have to sacrifice some things for the short-term in order to get to the long-term. And I think that it's just going to be a great build. Like we talk about, you know, rosters, it's going to be interesting what she chooses to do, but I think that, you know, we can expect the team to continue to build. And at the end of the day, they're professional soccer players who are going to go out and compete. And it's the U.S. women's national team. So I wouldn't expect anything less than them going there trying to win it.
Carly, you've worked with me. You've had the displeasure, I guess it would be. You know that I'm a heartless, soulless, emotionless, thick-skinned shell of a human being when it comes to the slings and arrows and everything that that comes in and that comes with this business. I've had the pleasure of working with you, and I've seen you grow into this role, and certainly plenty of criticism comes with it. And whether it was at a Women's World Cup or a Men's World Cup, you know, you go on air and you have an opinion and you have a really interesting opinion and oftentimes a provocative opinion like you do, you're going to get that type of criticism. Have you, do you think, grown to be better equipped to accept that criticism or deflect that criticism? And are you excited about this summer for probably some more criticism that comes, like I said, with the territory when we work again with these tournaments on Fox?
I think it's part of the territory. As you know, you've been doing this a lot longer than me. You know, anytime you're going to have an opinion, there's going to be half of the people that probably disagree. And I think that, you know, I don't sugarcoat anything. I don't just say things just so that I'm liked or I don't hurt somebody's feelings. You know, everything that I said at the World Cup, it's kind of been true, and everything kind of unraveled the way that it did. And it's coming from a place of me wanting to help share the truth so that some change is made, and change has been made. And I think the team is heading in the right direction. I think the Gold Cup was a great start for them. I still think, you know, there's a long way to go, but there's always a long way to go. And I think that there's a lot of positives that came out of that, you know, and the first time I really saw this team, you know, kind of come out with the mentality of finding a way to win. And they had to gut through some performances. The game against Canada probably shouldn't have been played. But at the end of the day, you know, it's no different than my career. I think majority of the criticism comes from Twitter. Everybody that comes up to me is, you know, really praised me for kind of saying how it is, and that they want to hear truthful things on air. So I'm just going to keep being me, keep staying true to myself, and just kind of sharing with the audience, you know, my view and what I think is happening.
You did have a post on X recently that I disagreed with. I want to give you a chance to address it. You said, quote, "Alexi is a good guy."
Wow, that's straight fire. My goodness.
I know. You know what? I said this to Alexi. I said, you know, I always, every time Alexi would tweet or say things when I was playing, I'm like, all right, I'm going to stick it to this guy, you know, and it was fun. And then now meeting him in person, I'm like, he's such a great guy. He's such a nice guy. And now I feel like I've been now, you know, part of this Fox family here, and I'm getting it lumped into Alexi's Twitter crazies online. Suddenly it's like we've molded into one.
Although you two do disagree on something, you just said that you think that U.S.-Canada game should have been postponed. Alexi did not feel that way. He thinks it's way overrated, this risk of injury in those conditions. So I'm gonna let Alexi and you duke it out for a minute.
Well, I want to be clear. It was much more around the fact of this notion that it's dangerous for the players. And actually, last night on our CCC set that we were, I was with Stu Holden, and he also turned and looked at me and said, "Do you really not think that it's more dangerous to run around on a field with puddles that's waterlogged like this?" And I don't get it. So Carly, explain to me why this should have been canceled. Now, it's one thing if you just physically cannot actually play the game, okay? That's different. And that's what, like it was the other day in Philadelphia, where the rain was not going to stop. It was not going to ever get any better. This was a little bit of a different situation. But if you're going to complain about puddles or a waterlogged field, then you can complain about the heat, and you can complain about a synthetic surface or something like that. So I don't get it. And I also don't get the, like I said, the excuse out there that it causes more injuries or it's more dangerous to the players. Convince me, Carly Lloyd.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. My take on it wasn't about injuries. I mean, how are you going to get injured just because you maybe slide?
You're going to drown.
For me, it was the play. The first half in particular, you know, you couldn't even pass the ball. I mean, it would just get held up in puddles, and I actually wanted to see a good game against Canada and the U.S. Canada's in a bit of a transition too, kind of switched up their formation, a little three back going on. So as far as letting the players play and actually have a game of soccer where they're going to pass the ball around, that was my take on it. But it did get a bit better in the second half. But I played in snow before. We were doing snow angels as goal celebrations. So that game was unbelievable as well.
Now, Carly, for so long in the women's game, we talked about the gap between the U.S. and everybody else. Now the discussion is about the gap between Spain and everybody else. If the U.S. was to play Spain tomorrow on a neutral field, how much of a chance would you give the U.S. in that game?
Oh, that'd be a tough one. I think everybody's already ahead and the U.S. now have to catch back up. So they have their work cut out for them. And that's not a bad thing. It's going to ignite these players, but Spain is on a different level. You know, we're seeing the tactical sophistication, the technical ability, but we talk about the mentality and the fight and all of that. These teams used to just mentally crumble and now they're not, they actually feel really confident to play the U.S. So when you factor in all of those things that these teams now have, it's pretty scary, but it's also exciting because it's making the game just that much better, making a lot more people become fans watching it. So it's Spain's generation is happening as we speak, and it's been happening at the youth level. So it was only a matter of time for them to get to this point.
All right, Carly Lloyd, give it to America straight here. You just mentioned Spain, and you think that Spain's better than the U.S. France?
It would depend on the day. I don't think that they're necessarily... I haven't been impressed with France.
Okay. England?
England, yes.
Okay. Sweden?
Again, given the day, it's kind of all up here against the Sweden. We know what Sweden's always brought to us, so that's a mind game.
What about like Germany or the Netherlands or even Canada for that matter?
I think long gone are the games where the U.S. is just going to be dominant, and it's going to have to depend on the performance of players on that given day, the tactical adjustments. I think any team is beatable. It's just this group of young, talented players needs to believe that they can do it, number one, but also be able to perform on the biggest stage with the pressure. And I think that's going to be their biggest task. Emma's going to come in. She's going to tactically change things. You can already see some things that she's implemented with some roles and responsibility and a bit more structure within the group, but then the freedom to play. The rest of it is just going to be a mental aspect to the game, which these players are going to have to learn. You know, that wasn't something that I just came on the national team and I was really mentally tough. It's adversity. It's being able to persevere through different situations. So I think that any team is going to be beatable. It just depends on how players are going to come out and how the game goes.
All right, before we let you go, I can't let you go without asking you an update on the chicks. You and your husband have been raising chicks now for a number of months. How is it going out there in Jersey with these? Well, they're no longer chicks anymore, right? You're getting some eggs, right?
Oh yeah, they're daylight savings. We've increased the daylight outside, so they're producing again. They're doing well.
What do you get a day? How many eggs a day? What are we looking at here?
When they're in peak production, we've got 9 chickens, so we'll get anywhere from 7 to 9 a day. So we've got a boatload of eggs. You'd be in heaven. I just made like 6 or 7 hard boiled eggs.
Oh, I love it. What makes them different, or I guess better, other than the fact that they're natural and healthy and coming right from the chickens? Do they look different? Do they taste different? What's the deal?
Yeah, I think they're fluffier. They're just, I don't know. We've been eating them for so long. So and we've always tried to buy kind of better free range eggs, but yeah, they're fluffier. They're fresher. The yolks look different. But they're, They're good. Brian's supposed to be watching them now while I'm in here because, you know, we've got some hawks flying around. So.
Do you have a poop cleanup system that you go with, or how does it work?
Yep. Every morning I go out, do a little scooper. It's almost like a kitty litter, shovel thing, and just scoop it in a bucket and just dumping it.
That's a hell of an image right there. The great Carly Lloyd out there early morning scooping up crap.
Carly, Alexi and I owe you a thank you because we were nominated for a prestigious award called the Ambies, and our submission was an interview we did with you, and it got nominated. So thank you very
much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I'm happy to be a sacrificial lamb and help out in any way I can.
All right. Last question. Are you looking forward to spending your summer with us out here in Los Angeles as we get ready to do these two tournaments and we're back in the swing of things at the desk?
I am. It's, it's been a while. I'm not doing the daily TV grind like you all, but yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be amazing. Just incredible from morning to night, just being able to watch soccer games, and it's going to be very exciting. I mean, we've got, I think we've all got high expectations for this U.S. team to do pretty well. So it's just going to be a massive build toward 2026. So yeah, out in LA and enjoying some sunshine.
It's going to be fun. I know you're huge in terms of the wardrobe department. They love you, and you are incredible in all the different looks that you have. I can't even come close to keeping up to what you're doing. Do you have some new stuff ready for the summer?
I know. Well, I took my whole wardrobe home from Australia, so they're going to have to come up with some new pieces. Hopefully, some fun, colorful, exciting pieces to be determined, I guess.
Love it. I love it. All right. The great Carly Lloyd. We love working with you. Can't wait to see you this summer. We'll actually be out in Dallas. I'll see you next week out in Dallas for the some promotion for some Fox promotion around the, what are we calling this thing? Nations League over there, semifinal and final. So I'll see you out there. And then, as I said, we're going to have a wonderful summer with the summer of soccer that is upon us. Carly, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. Great chatting.
All right. Thank you, Carly Lloyd. It's always fun talking with her, Mossy. She's really interesting. And as I mentioned in the interview, her evolution and her progress and her growth in terms of television has just been wonderful to see. And I just enjoy working with her, and I enjoy talking with her, whether it's about soccer or anything else. She's interesting. We disagree at times on different things, but that's that comes with the territory. And I love that she is... that she is so fearless, even in the face of, at times, criticism out there. And she is very, very quickly adapted to this job. And she brings it each and every time, whether she's on television with us or whether she's here at the State of the Union. All right, let's take another quick break, or our first quick break, actually. And when we come back, yeah, we got all sorts of games that are going on here and there and everywhere. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. Shall we do a little recap, Mossy, of the Champions Leagues here and abroad?
Yes, as we discussed at the start of our pod last night, we had a triple header on FS1, CONCACAF Champions Cup, a round of 16 second legs. First up, it was an all MLS matchup, Columbus-Houston, 1-1 in the second leg, Cucho in the first half, Dorsey from the penalty spot in the second half. That result meant the Crew advanced 2-1 on aggregate.
I mean, ultimately, the better team went through. Houston is a little banged up. No Hector Herrera. We knew that. They put up a valiant effort, but it's hard to keep up with Columbus. I actually really enjoyed watching this game because it again highlighted two teams. And while Columbus, we kind of have expected it from them, but Houston is kind of new to the scene, or returned to the scene, where they play and they play in a way that is unapologetic. And both teams at times, whether it's Houston or Columbus, that both want the ball, they also have absolutely no fear of playing out of the back and will put themselves in some very interesting situations. And it is ironic that the goal that Cucho scored came off of just a stupid mistake in the back from Mikhail and a bad clearance. And look, if Cucho gets that ball on that left-hand side, he's going to put it away. And if you're watching, you can see ultimately what happened. But in this game, I am confident saying that the better team went through, but Houston still continues to impress me. And we talked to Benny Olsen before the game, and I hadn't heard from him in a long time, and I had watched from afar. But it is interesting that, you know, Benny, who, for those that remember back in the day as a coach, was much more about raw, for lack of a better word, simple type of play. And it just shows that if you have the player and you have the confidence and give people the authority to do different things, they can change, or we can actually find what they were meant to be all along. Because this is a beautiful type of play that Houston is playing under Ben Olsen. And again, he's a true believer. Obviously, his team is a true believer. And they put their money where their mouth is when they go about playing. So there are still good things ahead for Houston, but this was just a bridge too far.
Then we had two Liga MX versus MLS matchups. I'm going to lump them together. Both first legs had finished 0-0, so it was all to play for in Mexico. Pachuca claimed a 6-0 victory over Philadelphia. Solomon Rondon with a hat-trick. And then Tigres, 4-2 over Orlando in a wacky game. Three penalties, a red card, controversial decisions. We'll get to that in a minute. But overall thoughts on a disappointing night for Major League Soccer?
Yeah, well, first off, it's okay to say that this was a bad night for Major League Soccer as a brand. It's also, I don't think, right or necessarily fair to use it as a referendum on what MLS is, but we do this. And I get it. I understand why we are going to do it. Do these results here mean that the pendulum has once again swung back to Liga MX and woe is MLS and they can't possibly compete? No, not necessarily. It's always been difficult for teams and MLS teams to go to Mexico and play in these types of environments. I think it highlights the fact when we get all excited about League's Cup and the different games and so many that we have that are played on our shores here, it's a very, very different proposition when you go down to Mexico, and it can be very, very difficult. Now, it shouldn't be 6-0 difficult, especially for a team like Philly that has shown in the past that they have progressed, that they have evolved, that they have become a team that can find a way to get results on the road in these traditionally difficult places. But it was just a bad, bad night for Philadelphia and for Jim Curtin's Philadelphia Union there. I don't think that this is the greatest version of the Philadelphia Union. And when it comes to Orlando, that was just a show. That was just all over the map. There was no rhyme or reason. It was fun for a neutral to watch, but for an Orlando fan, you're probably not happy. And I think even, again, this goes back to something that we're going to talk about later on in the Ask Alexi segment about where your heart is and what you are looking for. And from an MLS perspective in a collective, yeah, it's not a good night. It's not a good look either, Mossy.
The great Doug McIntyre wrote a piece for FoxSports.com last week in which he made the very point you just made, that for all the fanfare around the League's Cup and MLS's attempt to imbue that competition with all this prestige, the CONCACAF Champions Cup is still the best barometer for MLS versus League MX for that exact reason. MLS teams have to go to Mexico. It's a more level playing field, home and away.
Yeah, and you know, as a player, especially if and when you are fortunate enough to be able to play international with your club, you recognize that as soon as you leave the confines of your country or of your comfort level when it comes to the league, a league that you know, it can change dramatically. And it can, whether it's the, you know, the environment that you're in and the fans or the heat or the, in this case, the altitude or just the actual grass that you are playing on, all of these different things can throw you out of whack and can look and make you look like an average team. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge for these MLS teams. And they have progressed. Don't let this fool you. All right. MLS has grown, has gotten better. Are they still playing with one foot behind their back relative to some Liga MX teams? Absolutely. But, you know, I'm not using this night or these results, and keep in mind that now three MLS teams just went out of the tournament like that, and by the time you're listening to this, there could be more that have gone out of it. The sky is not falling when it comes to Major League Soccer.
I agree. I'm not going to make any sweeping generalizations based on last night. We still have a long way to go. We're going to have more MLS versus League MX matchups. We'll see who wins those. We'll see who's lifting the trophy at the end, and we'll draw whatever conclusions we want to draw from that. But I will say, I thought we were past nights like last night.
Yep.
That felt like a throwback to a different age.
I mean, well, it was similar in that it was kind of after dark CONCACAF-y yeah. in a lot of the stuff that was going on.
Yeah, let me touch on Tigres Orlando for a moment. I hate that referee, Ivan Bartone. And let me just say, the penalty he awarded to Orlando when they were down 2-0 was an absolute joke. One of the most shocking decisions I've seen in a long time. Gignac barely touched him. That was a total dive. You said so on the air, so don't go back on that.
No,
now.
I'm not going back. It was an absolute dive.
But then, to even it out, you cannot award that goal, the third Tigres goal. I don't care what the call was on the field. Oh, there isn't enough evidence to overturn it. On a play like that, the burden of proof is always on it being a goal. You have to see clear evidence that the ball crossed the line to award the goal. And unless they saw a different angle from the ones that we saw, there was nothing there to definitively say that that crossed the line. So those two kind of evened out for me, because I thought that was a crazy decision the other way to award Tigres their third goal.
For those that didn't see it, it was a shot that came in. It was saved by Galassi. It went up and ricocheted off of the crossbar, came back down, bounced off of his hip, if I remember correctly. And then the question was, did it go over the line? Now, they don't have goal line technology, but in the moment, Mossy's friend, the referee, called it a goal. So in that moment, Mossy, he felt that it was a goal, because of where he was standing and his eyesight and whatever it was, his ARs or anything like that. So the call was made, and there was nothing when it came to VAR or any of the angles or replays that could refute that. You're submitting that
in situations
it should not
like
have
that,
been made.
In situations like that, the burden of proof is always on whether it was a goal or not. The status quo should be no goal. I don't care what the call was. I just think,
but
any
how
sort
are you?
Of
how are you reversing a goal call if that's the call?
You look
if
at
you
the
don't, but you don't have proof that that wasn't the right call.
You look at the replay, and if you don't see definitive proof that the ball crossed the line, then you don't award the goal.
But the
effect, you are changing it. But I guess in situations like that, the original call is irrelevant to me.
Oh my goodness! It was,
and you can see it right
insane.
Now.
Yeah, if you're watching
this.
The show, you can see what we're talking about here. And go ahead.
To your larger point, we began with 10 MLS teams and 6 League MX teams. And if Thursday's Monterrey-Cincinnati second leg goes the way I think you and I both think it's going to go, Monterrey at home with a 1-0 aggregate lead, I think we both feel like they're likely to advance there. League MX would have more teams in the quarterfinals than MLS. They will have really turned the tables in an impressive way.
Well, when all is said and done, it's going to look like Columbus, New England, and is that it?
And then whoever advances from Inter Miami,
exactly.
Nashville. We
exactly.
have one confirmed matchup, and it's a great one. Columbus versus Tigres. I can't wait for that. But I do want to ask you about Inter Miami. I had this conversation with Zach Kenworthy in the control room last night, and some people brought this up to you on X today, and I'm going to ask it right now. When we talk about MLS versus League MX and MLS teams representing the league, do you almost view Inter Miami as an outlier? So if all the other MLS teams not named Inter Miami, when they face League MX teams, they get trounced, but then Inter Miami goes on to win the whole thing because Messi goes Messi, does that really feel like a statement on behalf of MLS as a whole? Or does Inter Miami and Messi feel like such an outlier right now? Do you get what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. And I'll probably expand upon this in my Ask Alexi segment, because I know we have a question about that coming. But I will say this. If Inter Miami wins, I do think that MLS as a whole wins. There will be the narrative that it's just about Messi. And yes, of course it is just about Messi. But I think you have to, I guess, compare and contrast with if Nashville SC, for example, were to go on and win this tournament. Is that better for Major League Soccer in terms of the credibility and the visibility and the relevance, both domestically and internationally? Is that better than Inter Miami? I think, like it or not, Inter Miami for the world and for a good portion of the United States is a proxy. And as they go, a lot of people will look at MLS in a better or worse way. It might not be fair, but that's the reality of the situation. You agree?
Listen, I'm of two minds on it, because when Messi led Barcelona to UEFA Champions League titles, everybody in Spain was proudly holding that up as evidence that La Liga was the best league in the world. So, I mean, MLS shouldn't apologize for the fact that they were able to lure Messi. But I do think it would, Inter Miami and Messi winning it would feel different than, say, Seattle 2 years ago. When we talk about this conversation about MLS and Liga MX and the level of the two leagues and using this competition as a barometer for that, there is something that feels different about Inter Miami. They do feel like a bit more of an outlier to me.
Yeah, but that Messi tide, okay, raises all boats out there. And I don't think that you can discount that. And I don't think, like I said, if Nashville or some other team were to go on and win this tournament, I don't think it would have the same effect. And it'd be different. I don't know. It remains to be seen, I guess, if it's better or worse there. But let us know what you think. What else, Mossy?
Let's look ahead to some weekend MLS games. The LA Galaxy will play host to St. Louis.
The LA Galaxy will... that's the game that Marisa Du, we were working with last night, is going to do. And he's really... He was telling me last night that he's really looking forward to seeing... if this team is for real when it comes to the Los Angeles Galaxy. And I'm with him there, because I think everybody agrees that they are better. It's just how much better ultimately are they? And when it comes to St. Louis, again, it's all right. Well, this is the second year and it gets difficult and you're not surprising anybody else. But when it comes to both of these teams, I think everybody should be pleasantly surprised how they have at least started off this year.
Minnesota playing host to LAFC. Minnesota, 7 points from 3 games. They won away to Orlando last time out. Pretty good start to the season for the Loons.
Do they have a coach yet, Mossy? What's going on over there? It's great for the Loons. I don't know if I can put my finger on why it's happening, other than this is just MLS. And I'm not sure the Loons can put their finger on. And they don't need to. They just need to keep doing whatever it is they're doing. And now, you know, they get to face an elite team at home. And I think that this is where the difficulties for the Loons rear their ugly head.
Columbus playing host to the Red Bulls, both teams with 7 points from 3 games. Columbus, as we talked about, played midweek in CCC, so we'll see how they juggle that. The Red Bulls off to a good start this season. Emil Forsberg looking good, and we see where they are in the standings and where NYCFC is, so it does look like this season advantage the Red Bulls in that rivalry.
Well, the New York metropolitan area, I know you are a native son, right now it's red, and again, it could shift, and there could be changes both on and off the field, and there probably will be when it comes to NYCFC, but this is going to be fun because this is a revamped New York Red Bulls and Columbus is Columbus. Now, the midweek fatigue that we often talk about when it comes to teams around the world, and in particular when it comes to teams in Europe, and the data that suggests that this is a problem. Do you think that that will be a factor here? Still very early in the season.
I will say, Columbus, they were the very first team to play this week. Tuesday afternoon, this game is on Saturday. That's actually a decent enough break to recharge your batteries, no?
I think that they're going to be okay. And again, you know, watching Columbus, like I said, when it comes to Houston and a handful of teams out there, they don't apologize for who they are. They play a certain way. And I got a lot of respect for both the players and in this case, Wilfred Nancy or whoever is coaching, where it's not just a bunch of BS. It's just not a bunch of jargon and a bunch of talk out there. They actually play a certain way. They tell you and everybody else that this is how they're going to play. It doesn't mean that they don't have wrinkles at different times, but I like it. I like it when people are true to their principles and they don't just completely betray them at the first sign of difficulty or at any sign of difficulty when it comes to Columbus.
Next up, the UEFA Champions League quarterfinals are set. 4 more teams advanced this week. We'll take them in order. Beginning on Tuesday, Arsenal played host to Porto. Remember, they had lost the first leg 1-0. They were up 1-0 after 90 minutes in the second leg, thanks to a Trossard goal that sent the tie to extra time and then eventually penalties. That's where David Raya became the hero. Brazilians Wendell and Galeno both denied. Arsenal off to the quarterfinals for the first time since 2010.
Let me ask you something. It has I guess, what to do what went on the field. But I was watching our friends over there on Paramount, Kate and Thierry Henry and Jamie and those guys over there. And there was a lot of talk over the last couple of days about the atmosphere at the game. And you can educate me and others here now. Is this a, what do they call it? A prawns type of situation, or the shrimp or whatever? Like, there's a hoity type of environment that's been created over there when it comes to Arsenal. Were they really excited about the fact that there was an energetic type of atmosphere when it comes to Arsenal that has been missing?
Yeah, I've been to multiple Arsenal games at the Emirates, actually. And it's not generally that raucous of an atmosphere, partly because of the fans, partly because of the acoustics and the way the stadium was built. But so that's probably what they were reacting to. It was probably unusually crazy for this game.
Well, obviously we weren't there, but watching it, it looked awesome. And it was a fun game. Raya could have probably stopped a couple more. I mean, he was incredible. And Arsenal go through. All right, what else?
Also on Tuesday, Barcelona put forth one of their best performances of the season. They claimed a 3-1 home win over Napoli to advance 4-2 on aggregate. Their goals courtesy of Fermin Lopez, João Cancelo, and Robert Lewandowski.
Were they back to their finest, Mossy? Is this a team that can do something? I mean, I know we're getting down to the business end here, but the way that you've talked about Barcelona now for a number of months here, this is certainly not a classic Barcelona team, but this was something.
Yeah, I will say that Lewandowski goal was a thing of beauty. The build-up to it, that was very tiki-taka-esque from Barcelona. You know, in what's been a disappointing season for them, La Masia, though, is showing out again. You've got, obviously, Lamine Yamal, a 16-year-old doing great things, involved in the goal that we just watched. And you've also now got this 17-year-old center back, Pau Cubarsí, who is bossing Champions League games and is supposedly going to be in the next Spain squad. Not to mention Fermin Lopez, who got a goal, Pedri and Gavi, who unfortunately both injured, but also very good players. So they do have a nice collection of youngsters that are built around.
Explain to the folks what La Masia is.
That is the fabled Barcelona Academy, which every time I bring it up, you roll your eyes because you think they just got lucky and had one golden generation of kind of lived off that for all these
years. It doesn't mean that they can't produce, like you mentioned, good players. And look, I mean a little unfair in that it's probably it's an up and down type of thing, and you don't. It's not just always getting better and better and more players out there. But whatever magic sauce it ultimately is, that's where I'm a little bit doubtful. And if you have the best players, even from a young age, that come in, stands to reason you're going to be producing the best young professionals going forward. What else, Mossy?
Then we go to Wednesday, Borussia Dortmund with a 2-0 home win over PSV to complete a 3-1 aggregate triumph. Jadon Sancho early and Marco Reus late. Destin Tillman started. Pepe came on as a sub, but the three of them crash out of the competition.
All right. Well, I mean, would you have been surprised if I told you that, going into the round of eight, that PSV was going to crash out? No. So this is as far as they can go, as far as they did go. And I think it's admirable that they did. And Dortmund now, and along with Bayern now, so we're kind of right back where we started, where we have the usual suspects when it comes to the final eight, or many of the usual suspects when it comes to the final eight.
And the last of the eight was Atletico Madrid. They advanced today on penalties against Inter Milan. Remember, they had lost the first leg 1-0. They won 2-1 today. Griezmann and Depay with the goals. Di Marco scored for Inter. That sent the tie to extra time and then eventually penalties. Oblak came up big, denied Alexis Sanchez and Davy Klaassen, and then Lautaro skied his penalty. So three Spanish teams in the last eight, oof. Two English, two German, one French.
Yeah, you can still see Lautaro's if you go out and look outside here, his shot. That thing is in orbit right now. All right, so Bayern, PSG, Real, Madrid, Manchester City, Arsenal, Barca, Dortmund, and Atletico Madrid.
I saw you repost this article, so I know you found it interesting. Miguel Delaney, who is an Irish journalist, he's been on this tip for a while, the top heaviness and predictability of European football. And certainly this final eight speaks to that. It's very super clubby. When Dortmund is what passes for a Cinderella, you know that we've got some real pedigree in this last eight.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was interesting the way that he framed it and the way that it is ultimately framed and how the situation that not only so many people that complain and worry about and whine about and march and protest about, if it's put out there in a different way, it's completely acceptable. But look, I mean, this is still exciting. These are elite teams for a reason. Interesting, though, we've for now a number of years talked about the resurgence, the renaissance, if you will, of Serie A and Italian soccer, and nobody in the final eight.
Correct. Inter Milan was Sean Sullivan's pick to win the whole thing, and bow out in the round of 16. The draw is Friday. We'll know. That lays out the rest of the competition, who faces who in the semis as well. So Friday will be a big day.
All right. We will check that out, and we'll talk about that next week. Anything else, Moss?
That's it.
All right. Let's take another quick break. Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. And keep in mind that our State of the Union podcast handle out there on all the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi, or you can call into our State of the Union podcast hotline, voice mailbox, 657-549-2297, 657-549-2297. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi out there on the social media platforms. What do we have today, Mossy?
We have one question on X. I think you were going back and forth with this guy in a discussion about Messi, and in the long run, is he good for MLS or not? And at one point, this guy, McFly McDaddio, said, Messi lifts all boats for now, but what happened to the New York Cosmos in that league when the Pele circus ended after 3 years or so?
That's interesting, because I thank you for the question there, McFly. Yeah, and I think I was going back and forth with some folks, and because I had asked the question about Nashville and Miami, a game that is happening, and if it's better for the league if Inter Miami, and when we say Inter Miami right now, it's Messi, right? If they were to win, and to kind of put all of those eggs into one Messi basket right now, we've talked about this over the last 6 months about what Messi is and to a certain extent what Messi isn't. As far as this particular question, and when you talk about the New York Cosmos, Masi, I remember back in 1996 when we started Major League Soccer, and for many years since, we constantly reminded ourselves, hey, don't make the same mistakes twice. And in particular, don't make the same mistakes that the NASL made in terms of rapid expansion and expansion that ultimately was too fast and putting a lot of the eggs in that one basket. And there is a real collective type of approach, let's be honest, to most leagues and I guess most collections of anything out there, in that you are, I guess, only as good as your weakest link. And I think that MLS, without a doubt, has approached it like that. And so when you are talking about, Messi leaving, and you are bringing up the New York Cosmos, I think first off, it should be noted that MLS is going in next year to its 30th year of existence, something that, I'll be honest, back in 1996, many of us could not have foreseen. It is not infallible. It has problems and it has challenges that that need fixing and need attention. But I do think that that NASL comparison and worry and warning, I don't think that those comparisons apply any longer. I don't think that they fly anymore. And again, it's not that, because this was relative to what happens when Messi leaves, right? And Pele left, David Beckham left. It's not really what MLS will be when Messi leaves, or even if MLS will be hurt when Messi leaves. It will be hurt, as would any league, including leagues that Messi has left before. You lose arguably the greatest player ever to play the game. That's not something that you want to have happen, and that's not something that's necessarily good, but it is inevitable. It's really about where MLS finds itself after Messi leaves. And it will all have been worth it if MLS as a whole, and again, back to this collective, finds itself in a better state than when he arrived. And if and when that actually happens, and I believe that that will happen, it will be judged as a success. Messi, whether he leaves today, tomorrow, or in 3 years, or in 5 years, whenever that day happens, MLS will continue. It's not going away. The problem is if you only think about your little piece of the pie and only think about yourself in the context of this league is what we're talking about, and that's all that MLS worries about. If Inter Miami is good and everybody else sucks, then the league is not going to last. And by no stretch of the imagination am I saying that MLS is in danger of folding. But for those of us that have been around, we live a history of folded leagues and folded teams. And you can understand how we can be sensitive to that. MLS has moved beyond that. And we are not in a time where people are scared that the league is going to go away, that is going to fold. And generationally, there's a whole generation that doesn't even think about it. Even though my generation would think about it because we kind of lived through that, for the most part, this new generation, it doesn't even occur to them that a league in, the size of MLS and with the impact that MLS has had could go away. And I love that. I love that there's a generation that doesn't think that because that's progress. But like I said, I think American soccer fans historically, because of the past that we have, are more apt to consider the greater good and think about the greater good when it comes to their league and sport in America than other leagues and other sports out there because of, as I said, the history and also because of the compare and contrast that is inevitable with leagues around the world and soccer leagues around the world. And we just don't have that when it comes to all of our traditional sports that for the most part are the best leagues in the world. And we really don't think about what's going on around there. But this NASL concern and worry, I think that that has gone away. It doesn't mean that you don't take cues from the past and you still don't want to repeat mistakes from the past. But MLS is a very, very different proposition than NASL, the old NASL ever was.
I agree with you. There's no comparison, but I'm just curious. When you were growing up and the NASL imploded the way it did, do you remember how you felt at the time?
I'll tell you exactly how I felt. Didn't even register. Because, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Detroit, and while we had the Detroit Express at a certain time, the ubiquitous nature of professional soccer now, whether it's MLS, whether it's NWSL, whether it's USL, the list goes on and on, or whether it's all the different leagues, I mean, I didn't have a steady diet, which is what the generation has now and what we all have now. I didn't have it on television. I couldn't go watch my team play. I couldn't go to soccer-specific stadiums. And so it was just this figment, the NASL. Now I have talked to people that have grown up, especially talk about the Cosmos, in and around that New York metropolitan area, where the Cosmos was a huge, huge thing. And so the NASL going away, yeah, that was a big deal. But it was very regional and very local, as opposed to, and we live in it day in and day out. And there's certainly some people that wouldn't even register on their radar if MLS went away. But there's a whole lot more people where it would register than certainly back in my day.
That is it.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's the end of our show, and I give you my one for the road. Welcome back. At the end of each and every show, I give you my one for the road. But before I do that, first off, if you're watching, you will see we have moved to our beautiful field set. Only the best, ladies and gentlemen, all the bells and whistles. And one of the reasons why we have done this segment here is because news is dropping, friends. News is dropping. Greg Berhalter has named his 23-man roster for the upcoming Nations League games. They will play the semifinal against Jamaica and then, who knows, a final against either Mexico or Panama. Not a lot of surprises when it comes to the 23. A lot of the usual suspects, but a couple of interesting omissions. No Brendan Aaronson, no Brandon Vasquez up top. Mossy, what stands out to you in terms of the players that are here or not here?
I am shocked Tyler Adams is on this list. Now, he did come on today for Bournemouth. He played about 25 minutes in this crazy comeback win over Luton Town. But prior to that, he hadn't played since September. I assume the hope was to have him ready for the summer. I'm very surprised he's on this list.
What about forwards? No Brandon Vasquez. I thought Brandon Vasquez would get called in.
Yeah, he went with three center forwards, Pepe, Balogun, and Sargent. So Sargent takes the place of a winger, but Malik Tillman is listed as a forward.
and Gio Reyna can both play up there as well. And yeah, on that Vasquez point, Miles Robinson is the only non-European-based outfield player, and yet there were still people on X complaining about that, which is crazy to me. If anything, by not taking Vasquez, Greg Berhalter is showing himself to be a Euro snob, yet people can't let go of this MLS quota narrative with him.
Well, if one thing's for sure, no matter what, when there is a roster drop, somebody is going to complain about something. All right, let me give you my one for the road, and what I'll do is I'm going to give you my 11 for the one for the road. Now, this isn't necessarily what Greg Berhalter would do, but this is what I would do and the reasons why I would do it. All right. In goal, Matt Turner. He is the incumbent, but it is, I think, a discussion and a debate as to going forward. And if anybody can tell you how quickly things can change, it is Matt Turner. But for now, he is the starting goalkeeper, and he's got to prove it continuing going forward. Back four, not a lot of surprises on the outside with Dest on the right and Jedi Robinson on the left. I thought about it a little bit in the middle of this back four for the center back position. I got Tim Ream. He's just continuing on, but at some point you're going to have to move on from him, but I'm still okay with him right there. And then Chris Richards. Now, I thought about putting Miles Robinson in there, but I think we know what Miles Robinson is. I'm still not quite sure about Richards, and I think he has the capability and the potential to make that position his, and so I kind of want to see him in there. When we get to the midfield, again, not a lot of surprises in terms of Musa and McKinney. They have been there for years now, and they have been doing a wonderful job. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Gio Reyna is in camp. We know the difficulties and the struggles Gio Reyna has had right now in terms of his loan in getting on the field and his club situation. But this is going to be an example of why I often say form is fallacy. If this is the player that so many people out there think he is, and I'll be honest, I think he is, then he should have no problem coming in kind of this number 10 role where he's given carte blanche. He can go all over the field, and especially against a team like Jamaica, I think he is going to have the opportunity to have lots of the ball, as the U.S. is going to have plenty of the ball. So I'm actually starting him, even though he's not playing a lot, I'm starting him in that position of, in advance of Musa and McKinney. And then up top, on either wing, again, no surprises. Way and Pulisic, they have been there for years. I don't think anybody's going to fight me on that. Now, the Balogun thing is interesting because he has been kind of the anointed one, Mossy, when it comes to this position. But I still think that there is a huge competition out there. You mentioned Pepe. You mentioned Sargent. You even mentioned the people that aren't there with Brandon Vasquez and others out there. I think it's an ongoing competition, and Balogun has to prove that he is worthy of being given this number nine position. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I can be convinced elsewhere and otherwise going forward. Any quibbles with what I have here?
I'm surprised you went with Balogun over Pepe or Sargent. Ream is interesting. Keep in mind, Carter Vickers is injured. I think he would have factored into the center back picture. And you're not yet sold on Johnny Cardoso to give him a start.
I am sold in that I think that he is a good player. I'm not yet ready to throw Reyna out with the bathwater, I guess is what I'm saying. And if he has been such an important piece, and look, you know he has his problems and has had his problems over the last couple of years, but I still think that there's quality. And let's also be honest, when it comes to this team, this U.S. men's national team, and Greg Berhalter has said time and time again that it's really about ultimately being able to compete with elite teams. And when they are going to be playing against the likes of Jamaica and or Panama and Mexico, the U.S. should have the ball and should be able to beat these teams going forward. So I don't think that should necessarily be a problem. Anything before we go, my friend?
No, it should be fun. The U.S. going for their third straight CONCACAF Nations League title.
You got anything interesting going on this weekend besides watching a lot of soccer?
That's it.
Yeah? That's it? That's all you're going to do?
That's all I'm going to
do. What'd you think of the field segment here?
Boy, this is fancy. We're getting nominated for awards. We're getting this kind of...
All right, listen. Keep reviewing, keep downloading, keep rating, keep subscribing, keep doing all the different things that you do. We are so, so fortunate to be able to have so many people that are tuning into the State of the Union. We also have incredible men and women that make us look good. And as I say time and time again, it takes a village to make us look good. And whether it's the new sets that we just keep introducing and the expansion that we have when it comes to our digital studios here, it's because you are worth it. All right, listen, we will talk to you again next week. And until then, and as always, my friends, as I always say, size the day.